Welcome in, Loons fans, to another edition of the Match Day Preview. Jonathan Harrison here, joined once again by my co-host, Manny Lagos. Manny, gorgeous day, one of the best days on the sports calendar today. How are you today, sir?
Good, thank you very much. Yeah, it is beautiful out there. Really nice weather. Nice spring day.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's not going to be that way this Saturday at Allianz Field, but we digress. We'll get to that game in a little bit, but we got plenty to discuss and plenty to review, because there has been a lot of talk about what Eric Ramsey did at the weekend, what the formation, the tactics, and everything that he did at the weekend. So there's plenty to break down there that I want to get into with you coming up later on in the show. But let's jump into this busy and exciting weekend of Major League Soccer from this last weekend. And there's a lot to discuss. I think the thing for me that I always like to look at is how Chicho Arango did, because he's one of my favorite strikers in this league that's not on Minnesota United. And another two goals for him as he continues to top the Golden Boot race, and another win for Real Salt Lake as they continue to prove that they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, you know, obviously he had a great goal against us here just a couple weeks ago, and that was a great road result for them in Chicago, and just really you know, a great first half where they really took over the game. So certainly he is showing, you know, from his LA FC days that he is just a great goal scorer, you know, and he finds ways to score. He finds ways to be impactful in games. And he's certainly doing that. And on the flip side, that was a tough, big result for Chicago, just because they're trying to get a little identity, get a little momentum going, and to lose like that at home when they're really trying to make this a year where they're, you know, kind of trying to push up the Eastern Conference table. Really, Real Salt Lake, our one of our Western Conference rivals, did a great job.
Absolutely did. And yeah, as you said, tough result for Chicago, but another good result for Real Salt Lake as they continue to prove how good they are early on this season. Let's talk about the Cali Clasico. I know there's some connections there for you, an absolutely wild game between these two teams, as kind of we all expected. And you talked about last week, this wasn't going to be easy for LA Galaxy, even if the San Jose Earthquakes were having a poor season. And the Earthquakes gave the Galaxy everything they could muster this weekend.
Yeah, they really did. You know, it's funny. I was coming back from Charlotte. I was actually driving after the game. I went to Charlotte. And so I listened to the game on the radio on the drive. And it was just unbelievable. You know, you thought it was going to be one of those games where, like, oh, they'll be up and it'll be over a couple times, once at halftime. And then again, a little bit into the second half. And it became the tradition of that game. Always is wild, always has both teams fighting, scraping. And certainly in this case, the Galaxy had to muster every kind of energy level they had, especially when it went down the red card. And really, I thought, you know, San Jose at this point, they probably won't take, you know, kind of little non-victories or moral victories, but it certainly they have to at this point, because, you know, it's been a really, really devastating start to their season.
Yeah, absolutely. Another team that has had a really devastating start to their season, FC Dallas. I think this one surprised everybody with where they are, second from bottom in the Western Conference, a 2-1 loss to Colorado, who continue to shine under Chris Armas and kind of surprise people a little bit. I mean, I don't think there was a lot of people expecting them to have as successful as a start as they have. They're fourth place in the Western Conference now. 4 wins, 2 losses, 3 draws on the season. And despite all that offseason change, I mean, there was a lot of it. I think they had maybe the most in the league this offseason. They were one of the busiest teams in the league this offseason. Yet they're on 15 points after the first 9 games of the season and continue to win. But Dallas, they're struggling already. Just 5 points from their first 8 games. That's not the start that Dallas would want.
No, and I think it wasn't the kind of the way the game went to, I don't think it was as close as 2-1 personally, just from how, you know, Colorado, you knew they were going to be excited after the 3-0 away win, mm-hmm. Coming home, and Dallas, he thought it would have been a little bit tighter defensively, a little bit more ready for, you know, a kind of amped up Colorado team. And, you know, credit to Colorado, you know, it was a 2-1 game, but it was probably not quite as close.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to the final game that we're looking at from this weekend, and we'll discuss more of this team later on, but 3-3 Sporting Kansas City, St. Louis. Once again, Sporting Kansas City kind of blow a late win. They give up a second half stoppage time goal to St. Louis. St. Louis rescue a point from there. But that rivalry between those two teams, has continued to impress early on. It's only been, what, four games between these two sides, and every one of them feels very different and very wild for very different reasons.
Yeah, what a great game for a rivalry. What a great game for the league. What a great game for those two kind of young rivals, and just how that game went. I thought, you know, at different stages of the game, both teams had their moments of controlling the tempo, controlling the game, and you really thought, oh, this is gonna be their day to take over the game. And the ebb and flow of it was outstanding. The goals were great. The fight, the energy, you know, and certainly you kind of alluded to it for our opponent this weekend. A team that hasn't quite figured out how to walk off the field with 3 points when they have leads, you know, once again, kind of bit them in an area that they've struggled this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one was one of the more fun games to watch. It was plenty of fun games to watch. But the one that I want to focus on now for the next several minutes, Minnesota United 3, Charlotte 0. We discussed plenty about Charlotte's home form last week, and Minnesota really kind of flipped that on its head on Sunday night or on Sunday afternoon and really took it to Charlotte. We'll get into the tactics in a little bit, because I know that's the big talking point among Minnesota United fans, is how Eric Ramsey changed up that lineup and changed up the formation and tactics. But overarching thoughts on the 3-0 win this Saturday to break a three-match winless run.
Yeah, I mean, I love using the word comprehensive. It was, you know, after the first 10 minutes, I thought it's some of our best road play that I can remember, where you just for 80-ish minutes, you know, you really are organized defensively. You're creating chances, your movements, subs contributed, great goals, a great save early by Dane to kind of like get us going. So it was a really outstanding performance. Like you said, a team that had almost gone a full year without a loss at home. And for us to kind of come in there and play the way we did and really, you know, play the game in the second half the way it needed to play, so there was no drama at all.
Yeah.
It was so impressive. So impressive. Just really was one of the better road performances in memory for the club.
I think comprehensive, you use that word. I think that's the best word you can describe this win, because it felt like you got a full 90 minutes out of this club on the pitch on Saturday in Carolina, and it really felt like a dominating win, and Minnesota really dictated the way that game was meant to, how they wanted to play. And so let's dive into the tactics a little bit. Kervin Arriaga gets his first start, but everybody thought when they saw Arriaga on the team sheet that, oh, we're going to slot him in the midfield. Nope. Ramsey had a trick in his bag and slotted him as the third center back alongside Michael Boxall and Devin Podelford, a three-man back line, something we haven't seen too often here. We've seen it from time to time with Minnesota United over the years, but not too often. I think this is the first time this season that we've seen that. Your thoughts on how Eric Ramsey set up the team on Saturday and how that really changed the formation or changed kind of how that game was played on Sunday?
Yeah, I really, I kind of use the word brave, because again, I think when you are still building into getting to know the guys and shifting systems and shifting kind of tactical ideas, is not easy to do in short spells. So for him to kind of look at the game last week and the disappointing home result and thinking about how he wanted to go about going after Charlotte, and then not only the tactical decisions to go to a 3-5-2, but also the kind of personnel decisions of saying, hey, I think this is a good game maybe for Pukki to you know, come off the bench. This is a good game for Fraga to get in there. And then, you know, certainly putting Kervin at right center back was also very brave. And you know, it kind of just played out where the guys really embraced the changes, and I'm sure they worked very hard at through the week, get ready for the game and to prepare tactically. And it was just one of those days where, you know, everybody just really flowed. So really, really fun to watch that type of evolution from last week to this week.
Really fun kind of chess match to see on the field, with how Minnesota had been talked about how they were going to play with the high press and everything that they've done throughout this season so far. And Dean Smith, who the Apple TV commentators mentioned, had remembered that from the preseason match between these two, and Minnesota kind of come out and do the exact opposite. They don't high press as much. They kind of sit back and let Charlotte play with the ball, which is something that they haven't done a whole lot. I think Charlotte went into the weekend with the second least possession amount of possession in the league, and they were forced to have the ball. And you could tell that they struggled at times with trying to break down at times the five-man back line for Minnesota when both the wingbacks dropped back alongside the center back trio. It really changed how Charlotte wanted to play that game and how they expected going in to play that game. And I don't think they adjusted that well.
Yeah, no, I was surprised in the second half. Usually, tank, particularly in MLS, you tend to have moments where you'll absorb waves of attacks or waves of possession or tempo in a way that creates chances for the other team. And like I said, I thought our guys were just locked in for really committing to dominating the game for 90 or 80 minutes, really. Again, I thought the first 10 minutes was pretty even, and they had some good mm-hmm. moments. So, but really, I think when you look at the formation and how it played out defensively, you obviously offensively had Robin and Fraga really having some free roles with Fraga as a second forward and Robin in that three-man midfield trap. You know, defensively, it allowed Robin to kind of push and close, on the right side defensively. And then that really helped us get our lines a little bit higher up, where we really made the middle of the field compact and we made it really hard for them to play through us. And next thing you know, they're kind of, putting a lot of balls over the top, where I just thought our back line at times, it was the three, Kervin, Boxian, Devin, athletically handled it great. DJ and Joseph did a great job of when it needed to become a back five, it was. And then our middle three, Asani and Will, particularly Will, has been so consistent this year. It's been outstanding. So all second balls, our ability to battle in the midfield and control that tempo with Robin, Asani, and Will was really good. So to your point, it really was one of those games where I can't think of a player that didn't really give us high level good minutes and make an impact on the game.
Yeah, when the time came on the broadcast for Dan and I to talk about the man of the match, we couldn't really figure out, like, after the three that were nominated, we couldn't really figure out who should win it, because it felt like all 11 players on the field did an exceptional job, including the substitutes when they came on, did an exceptional job of what they were asked to do. And it really felt like one of the best team performances we've seen all season. And it was really tough to pick out who exactly was the man of the match on Saturday or on Sunday.
Yeah, it was, my man of the match was Robin, though. I thought he was outstanding. His movement, his freedom, his ability to really connect on that first goal with Tani was great. He had been getting on the ball and, he created the early chance to let them know that we were going to attack. We weren't just going away, playing away in a 3-5-2 or what would become a 5-3-2. No, we were going to get forward, and we had a great – Tani had that great chance. I certainly enjoyed seeing Frag in there and a little bit of a freedom as a second forward, and obviously he had such an impact, particularly on the assist. But to Robin, I love that it almost flipped in terms of the movement and just the quality of play to create the chance that we scored against Houston last week. This week, it flipped where Fraga created great movement, great tempo, and Robin finished it off. So I kind of like that those two had a good connection 2 weeks in a row. And I certainly thought Asani put in a warrior-like performance once again. He ran the most of anybody in the game. He really battled the midfield. Obviously, great set-piece goal. He's got that athleticism in there to get in there and a great execution on the header. So, I mean, really hard. Like I said, to your point, I even mentioned Dane's early saves made a big deal for us. So I also think we should highlight Kervin. There's no doubt. Being asked to come back from a lot of injuries and still not being where you want to be in the season, and then asked to perform in a right center back, which he hasn't always played for us, and to do it so well, but then to add something that maybe some of our center backs and aren't quite there with in terms of that diagonal ball for that second goal, and the technical execution of it, and his play, was just not even just a pleasant surprise. It was just an outstanding performance.
Yeah, you saw those diagonal balls throughout the afternoon and how they kind of unlocked things for Minnesota's attack in those quick counterattack moments. And Arriaga kind of pinging those passes from right to left into Ragapane, into Lode, into Tani Oluwaseye. And that was a really fun development to see from Arriaga playing in a position, not normally his starting position or his go-to position, but he did an exceptional job. And that was good to see. Another guy, I think you said Robin Lode was your man of the match. I'm going to give it to, for me, Tani Oluwaseye, because I loved what he did up top and how he really split those center backs for Charlotte and was finding those nice areas to run and was using his speed in those moments where it was a 50-50 ball. He came up kind of just blistering pace and really caused problems for Charlotte when they were looking to control the ball. There was a couple times I noticed where the ball was bouncing, Charlotte players trying to get to it, and there was Tani Oluwaseye just out of nowhere catching the Charlotte defender or midfielder off guard and just taking the ball and either running upfield with it or causing Charlotte to have to pass it back to their goalkeeper.
No, I chuckle a little bit because I just mentioned all the players and I didn't touch on Tani when I mentioned it. And you're right in not just the goal, which I can talk about in a second, mm-hmm. but his ability, like you just said, from the very first whistle, to be hungry to play off both center back shoulders, to run in behind, to be hungry to run in behind, to really push that back line back and allow us to get our lines up. For consistently, you know, 60, 65 minutes until he was subbed was just outstanding. I mean, he really allowed our guys to pick their heads up, look to get in behind and got in behind. And then certainly, you know, it was just a great example on the goal where, you know, Robin's got that quality. And if their tempo's right and Hassani's run was right, Robin was hungry to find him. And, you know, one of my favorite things was the run, but the reality is that's a striker's goal. I mean, the ability mm-hmm. to compose yourself, full volley, have it dip at the exact right time where the goalie actually can't get to it. It's such a hard technique. I would argue similar to Pukki's goal against Orlando, where it dipped and hit the near post and went in. This is another. It's a center forward run, composure, and finish. And it really set us off to have a great day.
I know Prince Owusu is going to get all the plaudits and get the goal of the week because of his incredible goal, as he deservedly so. But I think Tani's goal, watching that ball come over his shoulder and hit it full strike on the volley is up there for one of the best goals of the weekend. Just the technique that it takes, the ability to concentrate as that ball is coming over your shoulder and have the foot-eye coordination to be able to connect on that strike and drill it across the net and hit the post and get it where the goalkeeper's not able to get it. That's some incredible technique from the young striker.
Yeah, it was. And I guess we can or can't. I'm not going to quite debate goal of the week because, you know, we just had all awesome, solid goals.
Yeah.
there was some spectacular goals over the weekend, but I'll take that. I'll take great, solid goals and great, solid defense and a great, you know, club win over a goal of the week any day.
Absolutely. That was a fun game to watch. Another player, you mentioned him, Robin Lode. His ability to find Tani Oluwaseye, even though they haven't really played a whole lot of minutes together in their careers, and this was their first start together, that pairing really worked exceptionally well on Sunday. And I like the fact that that's going to build between those two going forward. And Robin Lode continues to prove that despite not being maybe a true number 10, he's as dynamic of a playmaker in this league and as important to any team in this league as any player is.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a big guy with great soft feet, super strong, understands the game, finds spaces that are, you know, most guys don't. He gets out of tough spots. You know, again, his feet are so good. He's very confident to move the ball in areas that we need it moved and with players around him. And he has that ability to technically do things at a speed that it looks like he's slowing down, but he's doing stuff so fast. And that service into Tani, you know, ironically, it reminded me of in an NFL stadium, almost like an NFL wideout receiver receiving the ball.
Yeah, they had a couple nice connections. You mentioned the one early on where Robin made the really good turn and ran about 50 yards up the field and was able to find Tani on the cutback and, you know, thread a pass right through a couple defenders. Tani just kind of leaned back a little bit too much and couldn't get a clean enough strike. And Christian Kleen is able to make the save, but it sent a really early message to Charlotte that, despite not having a lot of possession and not focusing really on the possession, Minnesota were going to get the ball upfield quickly, and they really did that. And Minnesota did a good job overall this weekend, including not letting Charlotte, who are known for the counterattacks, that's what they've done pretty much all this season, is their quick counterattacks. It really didn't have any opportunities, only one shot on goal the entire afternoon. Overall, I think rounding out this conversation on this game, as we started it, just a really solid performance, and it's a really good one to build on, considering who the opponent is this weekend.
Yeah, particularly, I just really enjoyed the second half. Sometimes it's tricky up 3-0. How do you keep your tempo? How do you keep your discipline? How do you kind of handle the game? And again, I just thought, you know, the guys, and I mentioned the subs, everybody was ready to kind of manage a 3-0 lead and make sure there was no drama. There was no real kind mm-hmm. of moment where you're like, ooh, we're going to have to dig in a little bit here because now it's 3-1 or stupid fouls or cards that kind of give them a chance to get going. There was a sense of collaborative kind of focus that I think was really impressive about the win.
After watching another one of my teams that I cheer for in world soccer blow a 3-0 lead earlier in the day. I was very happy that Minnesota made it a very boring 3-0 lead and really just, you know, handled it like a team should handle a 3-0 lead and did a really good job of just seeing that game out and not letting Charlotte have really any chances throughout the rest of the afternoon.
By the way, that's a great mention, Jonathan, considering that earlier in that day, we had Eric Rams who just worked for Manchester United and, yep. and Dennis that just worked for Coventry. Having that game today, there was some irony there that our coaching staff had a lot more vested interest in that semifinal FA Cup.
I really hope that we had some of the club social media staff with a camera in there watching those two watch that game together, because that would have been absolutely fun to watch. That's what I was thinking about as the game was happening. I was watching the game. I was texting with our old friend, Callum Williams. I'm like, the coaching room's got to be on fire watching this game between those two with their connections to those clubs in an FA Cup semifinal. It was just,
oh, yeah.
As a Manchester United fan, that was a brutal game to watch. But when we went up 3-0 for Minnesota, it was like, all right, let's not do this again. Let's just see this out. And they did exactly that. And it was really, really fun to see that. How Minnesota played that out, and really encouraging considering who the opponent is and how much Sporting Kansas City seems to always have Minnesota United's number throughout the years. Warmer weather means green grass and plenty of soccer. Starting in May, Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps throughout the spring and summer months. Come enjoy the game, demonstrate your skills, and take your game to the next level with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the Camps and Combines page on MNUFC.com for more information.
Yeah, I don't think so as much at home. Certainly on the road, we got to be hungry to get a win there. There's no doubt. Outside of our great playoff win back in the day, we've struggled there. But at home, you know, it's a game we've done pretty well over the years. So I just think it's important for us to be ready for a good team that hasn't quite found their stride, because they have goals in them, they have leads in them. They have quality all over the field, and they just haven't quite put 90 minutes consistently together to get 3 points in a lot of games that they ended up tying. And actually, they lost the LA Galaxy one at home when they were up 2-0. So there's no doubt this is a team that's always well coached, always hungry to fight, always hungry to battle. Peter Vermes seems to really get a response out of his guys when they deal with adversity. So it's a big one for us this weekend, and it's a big one for the club, you know, trying to really set a tone of getting 3 points at home consistently after we dropped points against Houston a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Player to watch for sure in this one, Eric Tommy, 4 goals so far this season. William Agata, 3 goals and 2 assists for Sporting Kansas City this season. As you said, they've got goals in them. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the Western Conference, but they're also one of the teams at the higher end of letting goals in as well. So there's plenty to discuss with this Sporting Kansas City team. Just 2 wins on the season, though. 11 points through their first 9 games. They are 1-0-2 on the road. But how do you take advantage of this team that tends to give these games away late in these matches, which seems to kind of play into Minnesota United's favor with how well they've played in second halves throughout this season?
Yeah, I think if we're talking about how we deal with them offensively, you just said it, you know, Tommy, 4 goals in 2 games, you know, kind of scoring goals for fun the last couple of games. He's certainly shown some quality busyness. He'll be hungry to get on the scoreboard. I don't think Pulido and Shallowy have quite got going this year, so I think it's important for us to understand that these are quality players that can and do score throughout a season. So we're going to make sure we really manage them well and make sure we manage, you know, just – how we want to go about navigating their kind of impact on the game. Certainly Johnny Russell off the bench has always been somebody that we got to make sure we're aware of, and his qualities on the wing and his speed and just how he can break teams down. So for me, again, it is about us making sure that they don't get confidence and belief that they can score against us. And then the flip side, I think it's responsible how we played in that second half against Houston and really get hungry for 90 minutes at home. You know, again, I thought we had that against the LAFC game. Outside of that, we haven't really put a good 90-minute performance in. And I think for us to get off to a strong start is massively important for us at home, because we know we're still trying to fight to get that identity there. So it's an incredibly important game for us to really be ready to play almost like we did in Charlotte now at home.
I think Johnny Russell for Dan and I on the broadcast, he's one of our least favorite players in the league just because of what he's done to Minnesota United over the years. He is, whenever we see him on the field, we hope it's he's off the field very quickly for a substitute because we just don't want to see him and we don't want to say his name as often as we have tended to over the years in these matches. But
yeah, yeah, funny, just so you know, we actually played against him. We took a tour to England back in the day, and we played Derby, and he was playing for Derby, and I remember that day. So we've seen him even on the on European soil back in the day.
What was the scouting report back then on him?
Oh, it was same. Played the same way, dangerous, gets the end line, you know, that little quick move cutting in, you know, really just hard to deal with offensively. I would say, though, like I said, when he's in, there is an ability to get at space in behind him at times when he gets forward. There is space to be had if you can deal with him offensively. You can really get at that side of the ball and really use that to counter.
Seems like he brings a toughness to that team that's not there when he's not on the field, and that's really tough to deal with. Alan Pulido, he's a guy that has been up and down for Sporting Kansas City, has had some injury issues that have taken him, that took him out of the 2022 season. But when he's on, he's one of the most dangerous strikers in this league. 14 goals last season, only two so far this season. What makes him so difficult to stop for opposing teams?
Yeah, I mean, particularly now, he's got a little bit more freedom as not just a pure nine. If a god is in the game, he's going to be a little bit more of both a scorer and a playmaker. You know, he's just got he obviously had a great career in Mexico, and then he had a tough injury, and so I would say he's still building back to remind himself the kind of player he was prior to his injury, and he's just really good. I mean, he's good at passing, he's got good movement, he really has a nose when he gets in the box for shifting one way, getting another way, and getting a chance. So again, for me, he's somebody that we have to be aware of, particularly in the final third when we box defend. We have to be aware of that, but like I said, he's really shifty, and you might be quiet for moments where you're not sure he's dangerous. And next thing you know, he does a quick little move, gets the ball, either creates a chance or passes for a chance.
Tactically, what's the way to get the better of Sporting Kansas City from what we've seen from them this year? It seems like they're changing things up just a little bit from what we've become accustomed to under Peter Vermes. As they've kind of tried to rotate their squad and kind of bring in a new era of players in Sporting Kansas City, what's the best way to get the better of them on Sunday on the field tactically?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to sound redundant here because I say it a lot, but you know, particularly when they kind of play a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, they'll have the two kind of isolate in the middle and they have the attack with four. So that means we've got the numbers with Lode and Hassani and Will there, and really dominating that 3v2 and making sure that we use that to our advantage is massively important. And again, I bring that up because I think we have three guys that have different characteristics that make me think we have one of the better center midfields in the league based on the qualities that they kind of have and the skill set they kind of play off each other. So for me, the three of them, again, is to dominate that midfield is massively important. I think the extension of how well our back three played last week is massively important in that, you know, their ability to absorb these Kansas attacks is incredibly important. And then that means that DJ and Joseph have to be warriors this weekend. You know, again, we want to get forward. We want to create chances. We're not going to sit back. And that means those guys have to be flying up and down the wings all game. It means they have to be back and defending, and they have to be getting forward and creating chances. So to me, the key is there is the center midfield, and then our wide guys really contributing offensively while doing the kind of job they did last week defensively.
So that's just one of the games this weekend, that one kicking off 7:30 p.m. at Allianz Field, 7:30 start time for the viewing audience on Apple TV. You can join Dan Terrar and myself, 7 p.m. pre-match show on 1500 ESPN. And you can listen to us also on the Apple TV broadcast. You can change the audio feed for the home games to the home radio call as well. But plenty of other games going on this weekend, Manny. And I think this is one of the best weekends of competitive, really competitive matches across the league. And I think for me, I'll let you go in a second. I think for me, the match that I'm looking forward to the most this weekend, Philadelphia and Real Salt Lake, just because those two teams are so good at what they do. This is on the road for Real Salt Lake. I want to see how Chicho Arango continues his form, but I also want to see how Philadelphia handle a really good Real Salt Lake team. What's the matchup of the weekend for you?
Oof, good one. You know, I think probably if I'm looking at the calendar, I mean, starting with the West, you know, I think Austin's turnaround from our game And the Galaxy is must watch, I think, right now in terms of just seeing if they're going to continue to kind of push the top of the table in the West. I'm intrigued by that one. I'm intrigued in the West by the Los Angeles Portland game, along with our game, just because, again, I think we're really now trying to see if which teams can get to the top of that table, and we're part of that the conversation, which we should be. And that's awesome. So those two games, more games in the West, I really like. I'm always going to bring up the messy game, this one in New England on turf. New England is massively struggling. Yeah. Miami seemed to find their foot and is hungry to play well. But this is the part of our league where the adversity comes in. You know, this isn't like just it's a new climate. It's a new surface. And it's a team that has to deal with the realities that it's not going to be just, you know, kind of star football every week in every stadium. So to me, they're going to be playing against a desperate team. I'm excited to see how that game goes. I think those are probably my top ones overall for this weekend, for sure.
The other one that I'm looking forward to as well, New York Red Bulls, Vancouver Whitecaps, both second place teams in their respective conferences. And I'm interested to see how Vancouver respond and continue to build on their season. They've had a good start. There's been questions about the strength of their schedule, but now they're getting into these tough teams. They lost to LA Galaxy a couple weeks ago. Can they, what do they do this week on the road, flying across country, flying across the continent, going to New York on the road in Red Bull Arena? How will they play against a Red Bulls team that's looked really dynamic, really good this season? That one is a very intriguing match. But as I said, this is a really good week. This is a really good weekend of soccer in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, that's part of the league. I mean, the league's strength is its parity. The league's strength is that, you know, I've always said this about how good and how tough MLS was when you got 30 teams that all believe and hope they're going to make a run this season and do something. And again, that's so special compared to most leagues in the world that, you know, are four or five deep. And, you know, again, I even brought up the other night, Columbus's outstanding win, and Columbus is, I think, one of the better teams in the league this year. And they won the MLS Cup last year. And, you know, in some ways, you know, the top four or five teams in Mexico are really, really good. And Columbus is sitting right there with them. But the reality is, top to bottom, in this hemisphere, I think this league is really starting to tell a story about how good and how compelling a league can be when you add more depth to how good teams are and how well they can play.
You mentioned Columbus there, and I completely forgot to mention their win last night at their time of recording, Columbus 2, Monterrey 1 in the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. That's a heck of a win. That is a big win against one of the best teams, if not the best team, in this region, and they really stuck to it. They got the early goal, they gave up a goal, and then continued to fight and got the winning goal later on in the second half. But that's not an easy thing to do, even if you are the home team, to take it to one of the best teams in this region.
No, it's not. And you know, again, I think this is our probably last year of the away goal rule. Obviously in the European Championships, there's no more away goals, so that's going to make it even tougher for them to go down there. But at the end of the day, they've got a fair lead. I think they deserve to win 2-1. I mean, they battled, and you know, Monterrey had the spell where they got the goal, and Monterrey was playing really well at that point. But that'll be a great challenge for them to really see if they can go down to Monterrey and get a result and move on to the finals.
So predictions, since they'll play the second leg of that one, and I know I'm gonna get you to make these predictions eventually. Prediction: do they win? Do they go on to the final? Do Columbus find a way to pull out the win, or at least keep the lead on the road in the second leg of this game or this semifinal?
Yeah, I'm an MLS homer. I've got a 1-1 great, you know, fun night for MLS soccer.
I don't think there's a better stadium outside of Allianz Arena, of course, other than Monterrey Stadium. The view that you get from the stands, incredible. I think that's one of my favorite stadiums. That's definitely on the bucket list of stadiums to go to.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, obviously they've got a great fan base, super supportive, and this is not an easy task for Columbus to go down there and represent MLS to try to get to the finals. But again, they put themselves in a good position where Monterrey is going to have to score to win the game. I think that provides an opportunity for Columbus to show what they're made of. And I think they're a team that, you know, has been through a lot early this year, but they certainly have the players to defend and probably score a goal or two in Monterrey.
Who do they play in the final? Club America and Pachuca are 1-1 apiece after the first leg. Who are they playing in the final? Well, let's put it this way. Who are they going to beat in the final?
Yeah, I mean, you're on. I mean, you'd probably think it would be Club America, but Pachuca's had a great run. I mean, I think it's either team, I think, will give Columbus confidence they can get through this, that they can beat anybody and go on and win this tournament.
Absolutely. Manny, good stuff from you this week. Loons
Likewise.
fans,
Yep.
we'll talk to you on the broadcast this Saturday, 7 p.m. pre-match show, 7:30 p.m. kickoff for that one. Minnesota United Sporting Kansas City. Always a tough one, always a fun one between the two friendliest rivalries in Major League Soccer. Looking forward to it. Manny, we'll talk to you next week. And Loons fans, we'll talk to you right back here for the match day preview next week.
Cheers, guys.